Videhi. Please order. Tay. Your. Kinkarinam. Abayu. The maid servants. Anushteyam. What should be done? Tava. Your. Agyaya. By the command. Yat. Which. Shudaya. With faith. Anutishtan. Executing. Vai. Certainly. Muchate.
One will become freed.
Saravataha. From all. Vayat. Fear. Translation. Now, please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear. So you can repeat. Now, please tell us. Your maidservants. What we should do.
Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order
is automatically freed from all fear. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. The surrender of Kaliya's wives was now complete, and Lord Krishna immediately gave them His mercy as described in the following verses. Okay, so. Where's the pictures? Anyway, there we go. So, Om Ganat Timurandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuran Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I'll try my best not to talk about how women are more intelligent today. I'm not going to say I can do it, but I'll try my best. Anyway, so Krishna the Gita says, what is it? Chatur Vidha Bhajanti Mam. He says, four types of pious people approach me, isn't it? People who are in distress, people who are inquisitive, people looking for knowledge, or people want some good old money. So, it's a fact. So, you actually see that the Lord was using this situation of putting the ladies in distress to make them surrender to Him, which is quite interesting. So, of course, actually, Krishna does that, you know, I hate to tell you. Yeah, you join the wrong movement. Because Krishna says, yasyaham anu gridame harishye tadanam shunai. That if I especially favor someone, what do I do?
Take away,
put them in distress. And so all they can do is take shit. The rest of the verse is that their relatives and friends just like don't want anything more to do with them.
Because you don't have nothing to give them.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's nothing to leave. Nothing to give them. Because you don't have any money to leave them when you croak. So, and you're not going to the football games with them anymore. Or for those of you from India, the Bollywood movies. Really?
Yeah.
You're very pious.
Oh.
In Fiji, all the devotees, even the brahmacharis, go to the Bollywood movies.
It's an absolute insult to women, those movies.
I know, but they go anyway. In Fiji, they not only do they go to the Bollywood movies, but they play these guttural songs all the time, even the brahmacharis. And even during the kirtans, they have, not gajals playing, but they have gajal-style kirtans. You understand what I mean?
we had to stop them in Walling from wearing the earphones and listening.
Listening to Bali while they were cooking for the deities.
Oh,
so you're quite innocent, Dr. Lakshmi. But I hate to tell you, you know, India is not exactly the pious land it used to be. So, Anyway, so let's get back to the whole point here. Is that Krishna puts his devotees in distress. He takes away things. So their friends and relatives don't want anything more to do with them. And then what happens? They have to take shelter of Krishna's holy names. So Krishna is actually doing this with the lady. So that's one point we can understand here. Krishna arranged this for the sake of the ladies, so they would surrender to him. Now, when the ladies surrendered to Krishna, Krishna gave their husband the mercy. Because it also said that if you want to have Krishna's mercy, you have to go through Krishna's devotee. Isn't it? Every morning we're chanting, isn't it? Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, yasya prasada na kati katopi. So in a very real sense, now here we go again. The ladies are the gurinis, of their husband Kaliya. Which is quite interesting. Because normally the husband, you know, wants to have a superior position. But here, the ladies are superior. Because of their simple devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we find many other instances of this in the Vedic literature, which runs contrary to the normal chauvinistic attitude that men have, that we are always superior because we're men. I mean, even in the Krishna book, there's another wonderful story, which is the story of the Yajnik Brahmanas. You know, the Yajnik Brahmanas, of course, they were the guys who were attached to doing all their swahas and all the rituals. And this is actually very interesting. Let's tell a little bit about the history of India, because we've mentioned this before in New Orleans and some other places too. So there's a whole history of India that involves the original four Vedas, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda, like this, and Rigveda. So these original four Vedas are mainly, as Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nich Trigunya Bhavarjuna, Nirdrandvo, Nitrasatvasto, Nir Yoga, Shema, Atmavana, mainly meant for dealing with the three modes of material nature, because that's what people are concerned about in this world. Just like if we're preaching and you go out and you say, you know, we're interested in getting you to surrender to Krishna, who will be interested in it? Even in India. But if you go preaching, you say, yeah, well, there's a nice little beetle, Japanese beetle. Not even an Indian beetle, a Japanese, anyway. So if you go preaching, you tell people that if you do this ritual, you can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy. There'd be so many celestial apsaras waiting for you, or if you're Muslim, so many celestial virgins. Anyway, isn't it? That's a Muslim version of the Vedic literatures. So many celestial virgins waiting, virgins, not versions. Virgin is a different aspects of a book, you know, different publication. Anyway, so and they're going to be fighting over you. Doesn't Muslims say that? And also in the Hindu tradition, it's like that too, you know. The apsaras, they'll be fighting over you. Oh, here I am, you know. So therefore, I mean, that's what attracts people in this material world. And actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that if you want to make devotees, you got to give them balam rice with ghee on it. I've told that story before, I think. I don't know if I told it here. You know, that he said, once upon a time, there was a man, he couldn't keep any servants. So his friend told him, you give the servant some rice, you know, which is basmati rice or something like that, real opulent rice, and you put ghee on it, a ton of ghee on it every day. And so he did that, and the servant was very happy. And then after a while, he mistreated the servant, but the servant went away for one day and it came back because he couldn't forget the taste of the balam rice with the ghee on it. So generally people are attached to these things. That's why the four Vedas are meant for that, you know, the original four Vedas, because people are just into going to Swarga. Of course, Krishna in the Gita cautions us about this. You know, Krishna says, you know, well, the one verse, Shine Punya Marsha Lokam Vishanti, when your good karma runs out, then you come back again to this planet. It's just like the Vedic sacrifices are like accruing all this punya, you know, good karma. It's something like, I don't know if any of you have ever flown in an airplane. No? No one's ever flown in an airplane. Anyway, Garuda Airlines or something. So in an airplane, when you fly the same airline or the same alliance, what do you get?
Miles.
Frequent flyer points, right? Miles in your account, right? And when you accrue a certain amount of miles, what happens?
Get a free ticket.
A free ticket, you know, to India or to Bali, you know, if you're interested in that. Or to Hawaii. And you eat not only a free ticket, but you can pay for your hotel. You get a free vacation, right? So isn't that nice? Like for someone like me, it's nice because I fly like 200,000 miles a year. I think Jayapataka Maharaj used to fly how many miles a year? Half a million a year. But so, you know, you have all these frequent flyer miles and you can just enjoy life. But when you're going on your vacation, you're using up your frequent flyer miles, right? And then you have to start accruing them again. They have different methods of accruing them. Not only by flying can you accrue frequent flyer miles, but by what else? Does anyone know?
By credit cards.
Also by staying in a certain hotel, by renting cars. There must be some other methods. Oh, by taking a mortgage out on your house. You didn't know that?
No.
That's true. Taking a mortgage out on your house. Or anyway, going to Disney World or something. So then you have to get back to work. Because all those things require money. They require money, just like... Anyway, so when the money runs out, then you have to go back to work. So in the same way, that's the problem, Krishna says in the Gita. Shine punya marcha lokam vishanti. When the good punya runs out, then come back here. Get back to your swaha business again. Take your ladle out. Yeah, and actually the ritualistic brahmanas are so precise in their activities that they have like a spoon, like some of you have seen a spoon for doing this, you know, a certain spoon that looks like a hand, a spoon that looks like this, you know, wooden spoons like that. And I don't even know any of that stuff. I just use a plastic spoon when I do a fire sacrifice.
Seriously?
No. I use just one spoon. I don't care about all these spoons because I'm trying to chant Hare Krishna. So anyways... And Prabhupada said the whole benefit of fire sacrifice is you chant Hare Krishna. So the original four Vedas, the Rig Veda is mostly hymns to the demigods. Did you know that? Mostly hymns to the demigods, except for there's some stuff, Om Tad Vishnu Param Param Pashanti Yatsuriya. There's also all the demigods are looking to Vishnu. There's that in the Rig Veda. The Isopanishad's in the Rig Veda. I don't know if you know that. The Isopanishad is the only Upanishad that's there in the original Vedas. And then, so, yeah.
I thought all 108 were from the original Vedas.
No. Not from the original four Vedas. Hmm. The Upanishads came afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were all eternal, mm-hmm. but we're talking about when they were written down. Actually, the original Vedas were memorized. They were all memorized. You know, sometimes these scholars say that, the Vedic literature is only like, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years old. Well, that's when it was written down. Because before that, people had good brains, and now you don't have good brains. Now you have durmedasa, instead of sumedasa, you know, bad brains, bad memory. That's one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, manda sumanda bhatiyo bhanta bhagyo padrata. So the Veda, the Rig Veda is mostly hymns to the demigods. The Sama Veda is what music to play when you're chanting the hymns. It's a musical Veda. Yajur Veda is, you know, how to do your swahas, you know, what spoons to use. And actually, it's interesting. Prabhupada never did any of that stuff. And he said, if you were interested in learning that stuff, he said, go to my god brothers. They know about this stuff. So, you know, Prabhupada concentrated on, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, worshiping the deities with cleanliness and punctuality. You know, sometimes I see ritualistic Brahminical devotees even get so much into all the rituals, they forget about being clean and being on time. you know, which is crazy. It's crazy because Prabhupada said cleanliness, punctuality, and oh, and nice food, nice bhoga. Three things.
Didn't he say simplicity?
Simplicity, I don't remember simplicity, but I remember cleanliness, punctuality, and nice bhoga being offered to the deities. Three things. And then if you want, you can get into, you know, your mudras and your different things like that. But basically, you got to do those three things. You should be on time. Regulation of deity worship should be to the extent that it's done so punctually you can set your clock by it. Or you can go by the standard clock, you know, the radio clock or whatever it is. So anyway, so people really got into these sacrifices because they wanted material things, swarga, like that. And then they became so ritualistic that they forgot Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Para Pashanti Yat Surya. And as a result of that, not only did they become ritualistic, but they became so materialistic that they were doing brahminical activities as a business. You know, just like sometimes even in ISKCON, all right, you can have a hair cutting ceremony. It will cost you how much?
$251.
We can do your housewarming for you. It'll cost you how much?
Depends on how far you have to travel.
Okay. Then we'll do a housewarming. We'll charge you this much. We'll do a, we'll throw your baby into the fire for baby sacrifice, you know, for, you know, $200 for free. Anyway, so. We have all these, I'm just joking. It's all these samskaras, isn't it? And we charge for them. But actually, I mean, I know ISKCON can charge, it's not a criticism, but maybe a criticism. But actually, the Brahmana meant that he was yajan yajan patan patan dana pratigraha. He would exist by charity. Not by, I mean, people would give him something, but it wouldn't be like, hey, you know, if you want a blessing, it's going to cost you 200 rupees. Because so, and a Brahmana would be voluntarily impoverished too, you know, so he wouldn't, like Chanaka Pandit, he was a Brahmin. Even though he was prime minister for Chandragupta, he just like left when he disagreed with Chandragupta because he wasn't attached to the, as soon as you're getting a salary, you know, you're controlled by the person who's paying your salary, right? Because then if you disagree with them, you know, you better not disagree with them. Because then you're gonna, how are you going to feed your wife and kids? So that's what, that's in other words, the brahminical principle of truthfulness becomes compromised by the charging. If you understand what I mean, by salaries. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the brahminical behavior right now. So therefore, but the brahmanas became very materialistic. And not only that, you know, they said that only if you're born in a Brahmin family can you be a Brahmin. I remember that even in Vrindavan, the devotees went to some temple and the pujari said, whoa, very pleased with your devotion. You know, if you chant very nicely and serve Krishna very nicely, in your next life you can take birth, you know, in a family like mine. And they went back to Prabhupada. And they told Prabhupada the story, and they said, Prabhupada said, you can go back to him and say, if you do your puja nicely, your next birth, you can take birth in the Hare Krishna movement and do Sankirtan, you know. The Prabhupada reversed the whole thing. You understand?
They still don't let us in that Ranganath temple there, even though you can go on the one in Tamil Nadu, you can't go on the one in Vrindavan.
Yeah. And then also you can't go in the Jagannath Puri temple.
Right.
I mean, I went to even the Sakshi Gopal temple there. I went there, and everybody was saying what family they were from. And so someone said, I'm a Brahmin. You know, people with me, they were from India. Someone said, I'm a Brahmin from Tamil Nadu. Okay, you can go in. I'm a Brahmin from Gujarat. You can go in. And I said, I'm a Brahmin from New York. And they said, no, you can't come in. I said, and they said, who's your father? And I said, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And they said, no, you can't come in. And I said, there's a whole story about that. I told on the internet that I said, Krishna's going to punish you for this. And all of a sudden, there was a lightning bolt that hit like 5 meters away or something like that. The ground started shaking. I said, see? And they still wouldn't let me in. You know, they didn't take a hint. You know, Krishna was What did Krishna have to do? Like send it directly on their heads or something like that? And kill them? Anyway, so Krishna didn't want to kill them because they were devotees. So the Brahmanas became very ritualistic, and as a result, there was a rebellion against the Brahmanas. And that rebellion, there was multifaceted. Not only the Brahmanas were ritualistic, but they were actually killing animals and everything like that. In the name of Vedic sacrifice, you know, they were killing. This also happened in the Jewish religion, too, when Jesus Christ appeared. That they were actually selling lambs for slaughter at the door of the temple in Jerusalem. I don't know if any of you know this story. But they actually, they had money changers, you know. Actually, it's almost like some temples you go to in India. They don't sell lambs for slaughter. But they have all the money changers. You could buy garlands from them to offer to the deities. Anyways.
All those little things at Tirupati where that indicate what you would like the deity to bless you with.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little bit more sattvic the way it's done in India. But in Jerusalem, they were selling the lambs that would be slaughtered. Can you imagine that? And Jesus Christ, when he came in and he turned over all those tables there, turned over the money changers' tables and say, hey, buddy, you know, this is not religion. And as a result, the people who conspired against him were the Jewish people, not the Romans. So in the same way, same thing happened in India, because the Brahmanas, they were not engaged in killing lambs, they were killing goats, right? Mm-hmm. There's not too many lambs in India. Now there are, but they had goats. That was a goat sacrifice. And of course, Prabhupada comments that if you're going to kill a goat, you have to say in the goat's ear on the full moon night, next life you're going to kill me, which is a little discouraging. You know, it's a little discouraging in the slaughterhouse each time you kill someone. Next life you get to kill me. Okay. Yeah, you know, you probably give up that activity after some time getting the message. So there was a rebellion against the slaughtering of the cows. Not the cows, the goats. There was a rebellion against that. And that rebellion, of course, there were a multifaceted rebellion. One type of rebellion we know with the Buddhists, right? Mm-hmm. That was Lord Buddha. He rebelled against that, not only for the slaughtering aspect, but just because the Brahmanas thought that they were had a monopoly on all the sacrifices. So it's interesting, it's very interesting that the rebellion in India against these ritualistic Brahmanas happened from the Kshatriyas, because Buddha was from a Kshatriya family. And also the Jains, that's also the same thing, Kshatriyas. Isn't that interesting? So the Kshatriyas were rebelling against the Brahmins, because the Brahmanas actually had become contaminated, which is actually Vedic. When the Brahmanas become contaminated, Kshatriyas can rebel. When the Kshatriyas become contaminated, the Brahmanas can kill them, like in the case of Vena. Right? The Brahmanas just cursed Vena and he just died. So there's a check and balance between the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. So there, Buddha came and he was teaching nonviolence, ahimsa paramo dharma. Same thing in the Jain religion. They were also teaching nonviolence, isn't it? And they wear the masks, so they won't injure any like microbe or anything like that when they're breathing. It's really interesting. So it was a rebellion against these ritualistic Brahmanas. So this is a real problem in religion, that people become very, very ritualistic and they forget the heart or the core or the goal of religion. That's called niyamagraha, the technical Sanskrit word for that. So anyway, and that's generally, of course, we said we weren't going to talk about how women are more intelligent, but generally men become like that. Anyway, you don't find women get so much into the ritual. So anyway, so talking about the story, let's get back to the story of the ritualistic Brahmanas, the Yajnik Brahmanas, right? So these Yajnik Brahmanas, they were so ritualistic, performing their sacrifice, that when the Supreme Personality of God had sent his coward boyfriends to ask for some food, you know, God is hungry. you know, what would you do? I mean, if Krishna just came off the altar and said, I want to eat, would you tell him it's not the time for your offering? Maybe some people from India would do that. I don't know. Krishna, you got to wait till 12. You know, that's when we offer here. You got to be regulated. Control your tongue. Would you say that to Radharadakanta?
I don't know if I'd say
anything. You'd probably faint, you know. Krishna says, I'm hungry. Ah. Krishna would be fanning you. Wake up, yogi. I'm hungry. But this is something that like that happened with the ritualistic brahmanas. You know, Krishna sent his cowboys over and they said to the ritualistic brahmanas, you know, Krishna's hungry and Balaram's hungry. Actually, Krishna said to ask him Balaram's name, which is really interesting. Because these ritualistic brahmanas, they're so, you know, caste conscious that, you know, they asked in Krishna's name, because Krishna's considered to be a Vaishya, even though he's God. If they asked in Krishna's name, they would say, what's this Vaishya asking for? You know, let him buy the food himself. That's Vaishya. So Krishna said, this is the story in Krishna book, Krishna said to ask in Balaram's name, because at least he's a Kshatriya. You know, he's known as a Kshatriya because he's Vasudeva's son, whereas Krishna was not known as Vasudeva's son. Krishna was known as Nanda Maharaj's and Yashodamayi's son. You understand? So Krishna said, ask it. So they asked in Balaram's name, and they also mentioned Krishna was hungry. They didn't follow Krishna's instructions exactly. And because they're coward boys, they don't have to follow Krishna's instructions. So the Brahmana said, you know, we're doing the sacrifice. You know, it's not the right time. You know, just go back home, little boys. And, you know, just pick some fruit off the trees. Go to the Talavana forest. You know, you can take care of Dainakasura there. Anyway, they didn't say that, but I'm just making a joke about the whole thing. So it's interesting that in Talavana forest, there's actually these nice tall trees where tall fruit grows. It's not tall. The tall tree is not exactly a standard palm tree. We saw the tall trees this year. They're very beautiful, like palm. They look like palms, but they're actually a little bit different than the normal palms. Anyway, so Krishna went. The Krishna's coward boyfriends went back to him and said, you know, these brahmanas. They said, you know, we're not going to give you any food, Krishna. We're doing the sacrifice. You know, wait later. You know. When we're finished with the sacrifice. And Krishna said to his coward boyfriends, you go and ask the wives of the brahmanas. They're my devotees. So the wives of the brahmanas were asked by Krishna's coward boyfriends. And the wives of the brahmanas didn't think anything about even taking the food was meant for their husband's sacrifices. So you may say, oh, they were really unchaste. Just like it's mentioned here, husband is usually called Pati. And actually, it's called Putty Dave, right? Putty Dave. It's interesting. The wife should call the husband Putty Dave. It says the wife shouldn't even call the husband by their name, Prabhupada says. Isn't it? Putty Dave. See? So Maharani shouldn't even call you by your name. She used to say, Putty Dave.
She usually doesn't. She usually just says, come
here. She just says, hey, you! Come here. Like, that's even worse. I mean, this is completely horrible. Anyway, so that's like an insult to say, hey, you. So the wives, even in spite of their being, you know, so chaste to their husbands and everything like that, they just, you know, they just actually took all the ingredients that were meant for the poor husband's sacrifices, and they brought it to Krishna and Balaram. And that shows, you know, the real surrender. And then later on, of course, their husbands were lamenting. They said, you know, the hell with us being brahmanas and everything like that. But still they wouldn't go to see Krishna Balaram because they didn't have that faith.
They were afraid of Kamsa.
They were afraid of Kamsa. Just like it's described here in this verse we read today. He who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear. Right? So this is actually an illustration of that. The wives were not afraid of Kamsa. You know, little tiny, you know, women were not afraid of Kamsa, but they're big, brahminical, educated husbands were afraid of Kamsa. So who was more intelligent? The wives. I told you I wouldn't speak about this today. Anyway, so but you picked this part of the Bhagavatam. It's not my fault. And even when you take Krishna's pastimes with his associates, like the gopis, I mean, the gopis were all married, and just like we actually went to where Radharani's home was. What's the name of that place?
Yavat,
yeah. And we went to Yavat, where Radharani's home was, and there's deities there of, you know, Abhimanyu and Kutila and Jatila. You saw them? Yeah, beautiful deities. If you see the deities, you want to run away in fear.
The deities there are Radharadikanta?
Yeah, the deities of Radharadikanta are actually good. But there's deities of Abhimanyu, Kutila, and Jatila, and they're frightening. You know, you're thinking, you know, wow, what a mother-in-law. What a sister-in-law. And actually, even Krishna makes fun of their beauty sometimes, isn't it? There's stories of, like, in the Nectar of Devotion. So the gopis left their husbands in the middle of the night. I'm not saying the ladies should do that. They shouldn't leave their husbands in the middle of the night. But anyway, so. Unless you hear Krishna's flute. One time I was at Govardhan, and it was in the evening, and I heard the flute song. I was hearing this flute song. And I thought, wow, finally I've become self-realized, and I'm hearing Krishna's flute. Wow, you know, after all these years of serving Prabhupada, now I've got the results of my spiritual activities. But then I realized it was the PA system. And there was some Bollywood song that someone was playing a flute.
Oh my God.
So I was very disappointed. Anyway. So they...
Even in Govardhan,
you know, because they have a loudspeaker system everywhere. So they're playing, anyway, they're playing so many music songs there. So the gopis heard Krishna's flute and they dropped everything. Even, you know, their little babies, you know, they just like left them there. There was milk boiling on the stove, their husbands. And of course, Krishna was a little tricky because in many cases their husbands thought that they were still there, but the gopis left in their spiritual bodies. And actually, this is really important because it's related to what's here, that their intense desire to serve Krishna, in spite of being kept back by their husbands, enabled those of them who needed a little bit more purification to become completely purified. It's interesting, isn't it? So Krishna arranged, for those who weren't yet pure, Krishna arranged inimical husbands to help them become purified. Isn't it? Wow, that's pretty far. Because that's mentioned by the acharyas. I'm not making this up. Krishna arranged that their husbands wouldn't let them serve Krishna or join Krishna. So their intense desire would cause them to actually eradicate the last remaining vestige of whatever material impurity they had. So the same way, this is what's happening here. That their fear... of, you know, losing their husbands or whatever, Krishna was using as a leverage, as a trick, to get the Nagapatnis to give up their last remaining vestige of material inebriety or material attachment. So Krishna does it. It's interesting, isn't it? Of course, the gopis who are, you know, the eternal gopis, you know, the Nitya set of gopis, they didn't have any material attachment. That's a different story. But there were many groups of gopis who had that relationship with Krishna. There were the gopis who previously were the sages at Dandakaranya. You know that story? And they saw Lord Ramchandra and they thought, you know, we'd like to be married to him. And Lord Ramchandra said, no way. First of all, you got male bodies. Second of all, I'm only supposed to have one wife in this particular incarnation. So you'll have to wait till I take birth again or appear again. So there's the Muni gopis. There's the... personified Veda gopis, you know, there are the personified Vedas who took birth as gopis. There's gopis of who are the daughters of different kings. There's one king with 10 million daughters who became Krishna's gopis. Really interesting. What?
Bimala.
Yeah, that's right. There's this whole Kund, Bimala Kund. And I believe that's, that kund is actually quite famous because isn't that the kund where... that's in Braj. I know where it is. Yeah, I know where that is. But that's also the kund where Durvasa and his sages bathe, I think, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so Bhimla, he was a king. He had like 10 million daughters or 10,000 daughters, and they all want to become gopis, so they all give them to Krishna. So they have different groups of gopis. Interesting, isn't it? You know, there's 108 principal gopis. There's 8 really principal gopis. But there's millions of gopis, unlimited gopis, and they all came from all sorts of different directions, like Bhimala, like you're talking about. So anyway, so some of them were already pure. Some of them were just becoming pure. Some of them would become pure in their last lives. And that's what happens when you become completely Krishna conscious. You take birth wherever Krishna's pastimes are taking place. And you get to, you know, just get trained up so you can go back to the spiritual world. So anyway, so these gopis became purified, the ones who weren't yet completely 100% pure, by being restrained by their husbands. And so the same way the Nagapatnis became purified by fear for the welfare of their husbands and for their children also. So anyway, see, these are some of the points. I don't know if I should speak about some more things. But in this case, the women were more intelligent. Sorry for that. But it's not, all right, so we got to balance this. It's not that in every case women are more intelligent. It's when someone knows Krishna is Krishna conscious, that person is more intelligent, even if they're a child or a man or a woman. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Kiva vipra, kiva myashi, shudra kena na ye Krishna tattva veta, se guru hoy. If one knows the science of Krishna, then you're not supposed to consider a person's, you know, family background or whether they're their gender or the color of their skin. I mean, just like in India, there's this whole discrimination against people, you know, with different colored skins, isn't it? It's considered dark is considered inauspicious, even though Krishna is darkish. Just like if you go see any advertisements in India, you know, for toothpaste or for anything, you know.
Matrimonial
ad. No, not even a matrimonial, like the billboards, like for toothpaste or some soap, you know, or some stupid thing like that. The person always, you know, doesn't look like they come from India. They look fair. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's so much, you know, people talk about racism. There's so much racism in India. You know, based on the family, based on the Gotra, based on the color of skin, based on whether one means man or woman, isn't it? The sexism. There's so much of that going on in India. I mean, it's unfortunate. As I said before, a lot of that comes from the invaders, particularly the Muslim invaders. It doesn't come from the original Vedic culture, because the original Vedic culture is a very egalitarian culture. Egalitarian in the sense that the hierarchy is a natural hierarchy instead of like an unnatural hierarchy. Natural means it's based upon your abilities, guna and karma. That's natural hierarchy. But when a hierarchy is based upon janma or birth or color of skin or gender, that's a very unnatural hierarchy. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to throw out those hierarchies. You know, he said, Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kena noi. If one knows the science of Krishna, then he's guru. Whether he's a learned, you know, vipra brahmana, whether he's a sannyasi, or whether he's a shudra, it doesn't matter. You know, he's talking about the body. So whether it's man or woman, it doesn't really matter. The whole point is, if they knowing the science of Krishna means practicing Krishna consciousness, not just like theoretical knowledge, jnana and vijnana, then they're to be accepted as guru. And that's why, you know, you can have Western people from the West acting as gurus, even though people in India sometimes criticize. And it's interesting, people in India criticize the Westerners. How can you ever be devotees? And they don't let us in some of the temples. Yet at the same time, some of those pandas are taking, you know, Jagannath Prasadam and mixing it with fish. Not the priests, but some of the pandas do that. Panda means like the tour guides. The tour guides in the holy places, they're called pandas. I don't know if you know about them.
Big cheese.
Not all of them. I have some friends who were actually very nice. I don't want to be absolute about it. have some friends at Radha Kund who are I'm very close with. But mostly, you know, they're interested in the money. Just like I went to Radha Kund one time, and that Panda was just, you know, he said, we have to do the sacrifice for you. You need me to worship Radha Kund. And I said, all right, how much will it cost for you to leave us alone? And I said, 100 rupees. Here, leave us alone. So I thought, wow, this is great. And make sure no other Panda bothers us. So we're hiring you to do that. And so then we went to Radha Kund. Oh, I was in ecstasy. Then I went to Shyama Kund, and the Panda started bothering us again. And I said, what? I paid you 100 rupees. And he said, look, 100 rupees for Radha Kund, 100 rupees for Shyama Kund.
I was just going to say, it won't end with that.
And that's on a daily basis, too, you know. So, you know, Krishna is not some materialistic person's property. Krishna is the property of the pure devotee. And that anyone can be a pure devotee. Even an animal can be a pure devotee. I mean, we had dogs go back to Godhead. And you have someone like Uddhava, who prays just to become blade of grass in Vrindavan. Like you have this whole area, the Uddhava Kund, right around Kushima Sarovara, where Uddhava grows as blades of grass. You know, so that humility is there. Anyway, so that's the point. We respect someone for their practical realization of Krishna consciousness. Not, we don't look at the body. We're not part of like the modern Indian culture where, you know, we're concerned about what type of body someone was born in. All right? So any other questions or comments about any of these things? Yeah. Doctor.
Talking about going to the heavenly planet, Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, when he was very concerned that many disciples would be going to Swarga Loka,
yeah,
living for 10,000 years and then coming down here after the Krishna movement is over.
Yeah. Krishna says that in the Gita. Prabhupada was just reciting what Krishna says. He said, what happens if someone leaves his body after a little advancement in Krishna consciousness, according to Krishna and Gita? Does anyone know? Nobody knows. What?
Birth in a family of yogis?
No, that's a lot of advancement.
Taking birth in a rich family?
No, first goes to the heavenly planets, then takes birth in a rich family. That's Bhagavad Gita. First he goes to the heavenly planets and enjoys in Swarga with all the dancing girls. It's like a fancy hula dance. Anyway, so you watch these Indian movies and you see Swarga is depicted with all the fog around there and everything like that. You ever see that in like some of the Mahabharata and everything? It's not foggy up there, you know. Because they think it's like in the clouds, you know, it's all foggy. Then we'd be all moist and you get all sorts of diseases if it was like that. It was too humid. So Swarga is, you know, it's nice. Everybody's beautiful, live a long life, there's no disease. Of course, you get kicked out when your good karma runs out, or you commit an offense up there like King Yati. But so I would say a lot of devotees are going to Swarga. Prabhupada said that. It's not just I said that. Because they made a little advancement, then you go to Swarga. Then you come back and take birth in a rich family. In America, of course, it won't be America when you come back. I don't know what they'll be. After 10,000 years, you'll take birth in some snake family. So, whatever, you know. And then you have an opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said that. He said, it was very interesting, Prabhupada said about one devotee who died. He said, yes, first he'll go to the heavenly planets, then he'll come back to earth, take birth in the rich family, and he'll have an opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness. But he didn't take that opportunity in this life, so who's to say he will take that opportunity in the next life? Mm. Wow, that's heavy, isn't it?
Right, that's really scary, you know?
But then, if you make a lot of advancements, so that's an impetus to make a lot of advancement, then you take birth in a family of transcendentalists. But Krishna in the Gita says such a birth is very rare. Mm-hmm. This is Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has such a birth. Then you take birth, you know, in a family of transcendentalists. You know, you're born, and your parent, your mother takes you to see Radha Kanta. You go, Hare Krishna. So that's a rare birth, isn't it? So we should see that the children born in this movement is a very rare birth, so we have to take care of them properly. They're already devotees. You don't have to force them, you know, chant Hare Krishna, or else we're going to shoot you with our six guns, you know. you know, just trust them. You know, they've taken birth in this movement because they're actually great souls. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's explaining in there that the gopis that were living in the homes of the of their husband, they were not actually the spiritual manifested gopis, but they were identical expansions.
Yeah, they were expansions.
Set up so that the original gopis, of course, would never be married. And I had never heard that before. And I just...
Yeah. Actually, there's a place in Braj called Bandiravan. You know Bandiravan? That's where Radha and Krishna got married. That's Lord Brahma performed the marriage sacrifice. You didn't know that?
Mm-hmm.
Bandiravan, it's called. It's right on the bank of the Jamuna.
Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj has written that book.
Oh, he wrote about that, yeah.
He's written about it.
Yeah, we went there this year. It was a very nice place. And there's actually a deity of Lord Brahma performing a marriage sacrifice for Radha and Krishna there. And also there's also a place that around Govardhan called Gantoli where there was a marriage sacrifice for Radha and Krishna performed. Gantoli means like a knot, you know, where you tie the dhoti and the sari together. You ever do? You do that when you got married?
Yeah.
Is it still tied?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take it off. I'm not going to let him go.
You should just like melt it together or something like that.
Not melt it together.
Use some super glue. Yeah, we should take super glue to the marriage sacrifices from now. So the Gantoli where Radha and Krishna there was a marriage ceremony for Radha and Krishna, and the gopis performed this one, not Lord Brahma, and they tied the dhoti and the sari together. That's nice. You can go and visit these places. We're going to, at least the place around Govardhan, we're going to be doing a parikrama and Kartik this year, 19th to the 29th. We're going to be doing a Govardhan Japa retreat.
October,
yeah. At Govardhan. But everybody has to make their own arrangement for, you know, staying and food and everything like that. I'm not having anything to do with that stuff. You know, when we had our tour in January, we had people make arrangements, but this is going to be an independent thing. It's going to be japa, people chanting japa, meditating on Krishna's pastimes as we're going around to the various pastime places around Govardhan Hill. It'll be very nice. October 19th to about 29th. The 19th in India is, I think, Govardhan Puja this year. It's early. Yeah. Kartik comes early this year. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Who was saying that wives should not take their husband's name?
Well, no. The tradition is, you know, I know they take their husband's name. I mean, that's all right. Hey, Bill. Yeah. But usually the tradition was that they would call their husband Prabhu or Swami, not that the husband was a sannyas. Oh, then you take your husband's name. That's why we have spiritual names for people. So even if you yell at your husband, you're making spiritual advancement. Yeah, then it's nice. Then even yelling becomes purified. Or...
Maharaj, you speak like this in India also?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
People like that. They have a sense of humor. People in India have more sense of humor than the Westerners do. Believe me. Believe me, they laugh a lot more than the Westerners do. They love stuff. When you talk about the culture and things like that, they love it. Much more than you Western. You're Westerner now.
Yeah, I am, I guess. You can, I'm continually shocked by you.
Yeah. The things I said. No, but in India, they like people are shocked, but they like it. They like to hear about, they like humor, they like sarcasm, they like to hear someone who has some knowledge about the culture like that. It's not shocking for the people in India. No, they like, actually, first of all, that's a tradition when you have the Bhagavad Saptahas, there's a lot of humor.
Yeah.
The person who's reciting pastimes of Krishna, they always bring in humor and song and everything like that. It's not just like philosophy. People, traditionally, at least the last few hundred years, when people go to a Bhagavad Sapta or some Krishna Katha thing, the person giving it is like a dramatist. And they're actually very humorous. Very humorous. That keeps people's attention. Otherwise, people, you see people, I see films of people in Bhagavatam class and they're, it's like the old ISKCON joke, wake me up when my japa's finished. When I finish my rounds, wake me up. Or wake me up when Bhagavatam class is over,
Wake me up when it's prasadam time.
Yeah, so because it's, there's this saying that when you go to Bhagavatam class, all the inauspicious things in your heart are eradicated almost to nil, That's the prayeshu abhidreshu, that verse. And so therefore, what's keeping you from sleeping soundly at night is all these inauspicious things. So in Bhagavatam class, we're actually helping you conquer insomnia. So this is actually, it's medicinal. Bhavoshado shotra mano birodmat. Anyway, so it's medicinal, so you can actually sleep more soundly. The proof that it's actually pure Krishna Katha is your sleep.
You're not staying awake, being shocked again and again, remembering it.
Yeah. but what I'm attempting to do, the way I give classes, is to try to keep people awake enough to, and so I can, they can understand some philosophical points. So you can remember what class is about. It's like, sometimes people say, oh, that was a great class. And I say, what did I say? Oh, I don't remember, but it was really nice. So, they should be able to remember the test that you're actually preaching properly. Is that people remember and apply the points in their lives. Two things. You understand? They can remember some stories or something. So otherwise, you don't remember. What is it? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. The whole purpose of Shravanam and Kirtanam is Vishnu Smaranam. You got to remember. So I'm, using humor, which is what I try to do. I try to bring... And you'll remember some of the points I made in class, for sure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Only thing, I don't know when you're serious and when you're joking.
Even then, I don't know. So we were in the same boat. Anyway. Okay. So I think we... What's that? Some of you... Yeah.
I heard about the first one with Lord Rama. What is going to move this? I might have to explain to somebody and I don't know.
Well, actually, there's many stories about Radha Krishna's marriage. Also, Radha and Krishna, it was arranged, Mother Yashoda wanted Radharani to marry Krishna. And she smeared turmeric all over Radharani's hands. And Radharani was really embarrassed for that. And so she went and cleansed her hands and this whole kund turned yellow. I think it was called Pilu Kund or something like that, or forget the name of it. The name's yellow. So, and the kund is still yellow today. It's right near Varshana, this kund. So there was actually a marriage arranged, a public marriage arranged, but then the astrologer said it's not going to work out. Told you not to trust astrologers. But actually the marriage, it's not an auspicious time to get married. That was it wasn't the right time. But actually, it was important for Radharani to be so-called married to Abhimanyu so that these pastimes, the drama of the pastimes could take place. I mean, it's much more dramatic than, let's say, the pastimes of Krishna married to his wives in Dwarka, isn't it? Much more dramatic. I mean, but actually, it's interesting in the where is that? Vidagna Madhava, such an interesting story that I don't know if I should tell it to any of you, but anyway, I will. In the Vidagna Madhava, you have Radharani, who appears in Dwarka as Satyabhama, and Rukmini, of course, is Chandravali, in Dwarka. I don't know if any of you know this. Anyway, so then Rukmini is the first wife of Krishna, right? So then what happens is that Satyabhama is given by a king who? Such with an S. Satrajit. Along with what? Shyamataka jewel. The reason he gave that, the Shyamataka jewel originally came from the demon named Shankachuda, who Krishna killed around Govardhan. Is that a very, very nice area, Radna Singhasana area. He killed this demon who was trying to kidnap Radharani and the gopis, and he gave it to the sun god. Anyway, there's a whole story about that. I can't get into the whole Vidagna Madhava now. But what happened is that Krishna married Rukmini first, and then along comes Satyabhama. But Krishna had promised, Krishna had actually promised Rukmini that he wouldn't marry anyone else without her permission. And she wasn't ready to give permission. So Krishna had to sneak around and meet with Satyabhama before he got married to her. Interesting, isn't it? Most of you don't know this story. Rupa Goswami tells the story. He had to sneak around. Oh, it's such an interesting story. So there was this Nava Vrindavan, this replica of Vrindavan that was constructed right in Dwarka or near Dwarka, and Krishna would meet her there. And in this Nava Vrindavan, there was a cave. So they would meet in a cave. And on this cave were all the pictures of their pastimes in Vrindavan. Anyone ever hear this story before?
It's in that book by Shivarama.
Yeah, he gets it from the Vidagna Madhava. I haven't read his book, but I've read Rupa Goswami's books. So there were actually pictures of all their pastimes in Vrindavan, and they were looking at the pictures together. And they came to one picture, and Radharani says, I don't want to see that picture. It's a horrible picture. What was that picture? Does anyone remember? That was a picture of a Krura taking Krishna out of Vrindavan. So there's some things go on in even in Dwarka that are a little spicy like that, where Krishna sneaks around with Satyabhama until he gets married to her. So, because Satyabhama is Radharani, expansion of Radharani. But in Vrindavan, there's much more sneakiness. Like if you study the Ashtakaliya Leela, it means the leelas of Radha and Krishna at different times of the day. For example, you have the first one is the morning leela, which is about 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. It's during our Brahma Muhurta hour, about 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning. And during that time, you know, Radha and Krishna are in the kunja, in the grove, and they're being woken up by their associates because they better get back home before their parents discover them being gone or before Radharani's husband discovers they're being gone. And so they're being woken up by first of all, the parrots and the you know, all the animals, and they'll say, wake up, you know, it's time, you better get back home, it's dangerous. Brinda's in complete anxiety, you know, that they're going to get in trouble. So even there's anxiety in the spiritual world. She's, you know, in anxiety. They better get back home before Mother Yashoda discovers that Krishna is gone. So, you know, that's why when we wake up the deities, that, you know, someone who does advanced deity worship, they wake up in that mood. You know, Krishna and Radha have been together all night, so time to get back home. So anyways, then Radharani, you better get back home too before people wake up and see you both together here. You know, this is going to be a disaster. And so everyone's in anxiety. And then Krishna starts to get poetic with Radharani and they forget about their anxiety. And finally, Vrinda has this monkey, Kakati. One of her monkeys starts saying, you know, you better watch out for Jatila. And as soon as that name Jatila is mentioned, they start running at top speed back home. You know, Jatila is like, Kamsa they're not afraid of. And, you know, Kaliya serpent no one's afraid of. But, you know, Jatila, that's so frightening. So they run back home. Even Krishna, you know, when Jatila comes, I mean, Krishna just assumes different guises. You know, one time he assumed the guise even of the deity Durga with 8 arms just to cheat Abhimanyu and Jatila, you know. And so when they came, they just found Radharani worshiping Durga. Anyway.
Went to that place with Dina Bandhu Prabhu that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Where the motifs of Jatila and Abhimanyu. natural inclination is to think, oh, the past time spoilers, you know, of course, because that's the role they're playing, but like what exalted devotees they are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely pure devotees. They're spicing up. They're like, you know, you have spices in prasadam, like you have hot pepper or something like that. It serves a purpose. So they're spicing up the pastimes like that. Because unless there was opposition, there wouldn't be that sort of spice. That's true. Thank you. But the residents of Vrindavan don't even want to hear their name. And actually, the associates of Radharani don't even want to hear Chandravali's name. But Krishna mentions Chandravali's name just to aggravate Radharani. He says, oh, Chandra, oh, wrong name. And she said, what did you say? He said, I was just talking about the moon, you know, the moon. Chandra, you know. And she just like stomps away. So, I mean, there's different moods in Vrindavan. Just like Saki Stali, which is the place of Chandravali, the Goswamis don't even want to hear the name of that place. I think was it Raghunath Das Goswami or Sanatan Goswami? Someone brought milk from Saki Stali for him, and he actually took a stick and ran after that person as if to beat them. Raghunath Das Goswami, yeah, because he said, you know. He said, you come from there. I don't want to hear the name of the place. Get out of here. And everyone was wondering, what's a sadhu running after the, you know, the person with the milk, you know? Because he didn't want to hear about Saki Stali. So that's also around Govardhan. Okay, I think enough pastimes for today. So at least we didn't speak the whole class about how we what? Another question? No, we should end, because we got a lot of places in things to do today, right? We have to go see Vrindavan Boat, Dynamite and Thai, we have to talk about the cows. What else we have to do? We have a program tonight. Oh, Dorit's coming soon. I have to speak to him. Yeah, Yogindra and his family visiting their relatives.